should a publican, for instance, be guilty if people use his front bar to deal drugs? What if people believe that he's setting up the lighting in a way that makes that easier to achieve? Should he nonetheless be found guilty unless he does something to root out those drug dealers from his front bar? Or is it really he's just trying to run a business and they happen to be using the premises? That seems to be the sort of issue behind this court case about the internet providers and whether they are helping the people who download movies, or whether it just happens to be used, it is happening using their gear and their facilities, and really they have no responsibility for the illegal acts themselves. Certainly it's been a long and complicated case, but in the end the High Court has come down on in the favour of the internet providers. They say, look, they're just really running a business, and if other people using the equipment are doing illegal things, well, those things are illegal, but they're hardly the fault of the internet provider, or in my metaphor, the publican who owns the bar at which the illegal drug dealing is going on. The question, though, lots of questions emerge from this decision, this High Court decision. What does it mean for creative industries? Is there a sense in which, with so many people downloading so much material, that these industries simply won't be able to fund the sort of movies and music we all enjoy? Or is there another way in which the companies can respond to the existence of illegal downloading to make sure that they still turn a profit? We'll talk to Stilgherrian, the internet analyst, in a second. I think he thinks the decision was probably the right one from the High Court today. But let's go first to Neil Gain. He's the Managing Director of the Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft. Neil, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Richard.
Yeah, you were certainly concerned by the decision today.
Yes, we are. Yeah, I mean, the decision makes it pretty clear that it demonstrates that Australian copyright law has not kept pace with the online environment, and it's incapable of protecting content once it hits the internet.
Mm. My metaphor of the publican, though, isn't a bad one. If someone's doing something illegal on my premises, I'm not necessarily responsible for that, am I?
I guess it would depend upon the knowledge that you had and the power that you had to control or to influence that action.
Mm. They say that they don't really have much power over it at all. It's simply people using the BitNet, the BitTorrent system, isn't it? Using their wires and storage systems.
That's correct, and that's what it ultimately came down to, is the power to control. But what was apparent was the High Court unanimously recognised that legislative change was required to address widespread copyright infringement across peer-to-peer networks. In other words, the scheme of the Act doesn't cover Category A infringements, which would incorporate peer-to-peer infringements.
Okay, in other words, you've lost the battle with the internet service providers. You'd now like the government to give you a new law you can use directly against the downloaders. Is that what you're saying?
No, what we're saying is that the current legislation and all of the extrinsic materials which refers to the parliamentary intent, it also even goes as far as safe harbours, do not apply to Category A activities. So it would seem that Australian copyright law has not kept pace with the online environment. Mm. So it would just require amendments to the law to ensure that it is in line and has kept pace with the online environment.
But you're never going to be in a situation where you can actually prosecute people like IINet directly, given this decision, are you?
Well, not currently, you know, unless there is amendments to the legislation. But then again, one is hopeful that it would never come to that. What we are seeing throughout the world is, you know, courts and legislators and regulators recognizing that ISPs must play a central role in preventing online copyright theft, whether this is through mandated schemes or, in the case of what we are seeing in the United States, a voluntary scheme between rights holders, ISPs and consumer groups.
Now, some people say that you've got the whole wrong attitude about how to pursue this, that whatever the rights and wrongs, that in this modern environment you can't stop people doing it. What you've got to do is make the legal purchase of material so easy and so attractive that people don't bother downloading. What do you think of that approach?
Well, the Australian film and TV industry sees the internet as a medium with enormous potential for our business. And currently there are more than 20 online business models which makes rights holders' content legally available to the Australian public. And this is recognized by the Australian public. There is some independent research by the Intellectual Property Awareness Foundation, which is due to be released in the next few weeks, which tells us that 78% of Australians agree that there are an increasing number of ways which people can legally obtain and watch TV series and movies online.
Yeah, everyone's got a story of, oh, I want to watch Game of Thrones. All my friends overseas have watched Game of Thrones. They won't even let me buy it off Amazon or something, you know, and that's why I'm going to illegally download it.
Well, in terms of availability of content, I mean, you referenced Game of Thrones, but, you know, episode one of season two was available in Australia online 5 days after it was available in the United States.
I mean, why not one day after? Why not the same day?
Well, I mean, the crux of this issue comes down to no business model in the world can compete with free. You know, commerce can only exist in a free market economy. It cannot exist in a free-for-all economy. And ultimately, you know, as you referenced in the preamble at the start of your program, you know, a free-for-all internet is not in the rights holders' interest and it's not in the ISP's interest, and ultimately it won't be in the consumer's interest. But when there is a dearth of quality entertainment available.
Okay, but I just want to harp on about Game of Thrones because there's a million other examples. But to create a 5-day gap on stopping people legally buying it, when you know how easy it is for people who are into the very audience for that sort of show are young and internet savvy, half the country had downloaded it for free in those 5 days when the industry were stopping them buying it legally.
I mean, Richard, my comment regarding Game of Thrones was not saying that the 5-day window was the ideal. It's saying that, you know, these windows between its release dates in the United States and release dates in Australia are certainly being reduced. Last year in 2011, the top 10 films in Australia by box office revenues, of those top 10 films, 8 were released in Australia before they were released in America.
Do you know how deep the addiction in my household is to Friday Night Lights, which has been showing on ABC 2? Series 5 has been available for a long time in the United States. I've gone on and tried to buy it legally off Amazon, been told I'm not allowed to because I live in Australia. And every time I mention this to anybody I know under 30, they say, oh, we can get it for you for free. Just say the word. And I say, you'd be pleased to know. I say, no thanks, I'll wait. But many people don't.
Well, I mean, just because something is freely available on the internet, it doesn't mean to say that it should be free. It comes back to the issue about, you know, no business model in the world can compete with free. Again, because it may be more convenient to illegally download content that isn't available in one country for legal reasons, it doesn't mean to say that it's right.
No, I guess the only point I'm making, I know it's a limited point, is could not the industry do a little more to make the legal purchase of these things easier and more satisfying, and maybe throw in a few bells and whistles, a few extras with the legal purchase to make it more attractive?
I think business models are changing. There's more of them. They're more flexible. Price points are becoming more flexible. So we are seeing more business models, more flexible business models, and we're seeing content being made available, you know, in Australian theatres before the United States, and we are seeing, and we will see, popular TV shows being made available in Australia quicker than what they currently are.
Neil Gain is with us. Stay with us, if you would. He's the Managing Director of the Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft. Steele Gerrion, the Internet Analyst and Freelance Writer for Crikey.com, is also here. Good afternoon, Steele Gerrion.
G'day, Richard.
Now, what do you think of the decision today?
Well, it goes a long way to clarifying the role of an internet service provider in the world, which is simply to connect us to whatever we want to connect to, whether it's other people, whether it's other businesses and so on. And it's not their job to go looking into what that content is or to investigate allegations of wrongdoing, or at least when those allegations are presented in the way that that were presented in the case here.
And a reputable trucking company would not knowingly let people truck arms from Melbourne to Sydney. They would stop doing it. They wouldn't serve customers if they thought they looked dodgy.
Well, that's right, but there are procedures for doing that. And in the case of the trucking company, to take that example, you couldn't have someone, say, from Sony, who's selling televisions, roll up to the trucking firm and say, we want to find out who's shipping that stuff in your truck because we reckon it's stolen TVs. They would have to go to the police would have to launch an investigation and so on. And that's kind of what's happened in this case here, that the form of the complaints being made by the copyright holders was not in a form that IINet were particularly obliged to do anything with.
Okay, but the reality is that whether the internet service providers do it or we find some other way of doing it, if we don't, Neil says, if we don't stop everyone just downloading everything for free, then how can, you know, Kate Miller-Heike, who we're having on the show later, how can Sony Music get together and invest enough money to give her studio time? Well, if everyone's going to steal the album, how can a Game of Thrones be made so expensively and beautifully if everyone's going to knock it off?
Well, the answer to that is that an awful lot of the costs of the end product that we get, whether we're talking music, whether we're talking a music video, whether we're talking a film, are in fact distribution costs. Now, not all of it, and obviously if you're making a big blockbuster Hollywood film with a $200 million budget, that's a certain kind of model. But the vast majority of creative stuff that we see on the internet or listen to is actually made by processes that are getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper all the time. And the
I don't know how much Game of Thrones costs, but you can see from looking at it, obviously costs, you know, millions of dollars an episode.
Well, that's right.
But where does that million dollars come from if everyone knocks it off?
Well, the point is not everyone is knocking it off. Game of Thrones, for example, is shown on television, which sells ad space against it. That's where the money comes.
But if before the TV network has managed to get it on screen, everyone who's interested in it has already watched it, then who's going to watch it on screen?
Well, this comes back to Neil's point about the 5-day gap, really. I mean, we never really got a clear answer to why the 5 days. And I know the answer to that because there is arrangements, there's existing organisations. It's really hard for the industry to move. But Australia is kind of behind some other countries in terms of making stuff freely available. I mean, Richard, you asked yourself, why couldn't it be available the next day? There's no physical reason why it can't be. It's all contractual arrangements. Now, I'll come back to...
I suppose he would say, I'll get Neil back to say himself.
Yeah, but Neil's got some good points to make.
But you know, isn't it true, if you own something, then you should be able to decide. If you want to have a 5-day gap, if you own a pair of jeans and you don't want to sell it until Friday, it's your job. It's your decision. You don't.
Well, that's right.
If someone says, well, if you don't sell it to me before, then I'll break your window
steal
you're
right.
It.
And look, there's one point I will agree with you on, Richard, very easily. I'm perfectly happy to wait to see something. I don't need to see it within, 5 minutes of it becoming available. But, you know, that's because I'm getting to be an old fart like you, probably.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, that's it. We are now in an age where people expect, because they themselves can say, look, I just shot a video on my video camera, I put it up on Facebook, and it's there, and all my friends can watch it right now. And people growing up in that environment simply don't understand why, when they're talking to their friends overseas and they're all exchanging messages about how cool the episode is, they're feeling left out and they want it. Now, I'm not by any means using that as an excuse for obtaining things illegally, but there's a great example I want to use is the music industry before this. The music industry has kind of been there, done that with all of this stuff. And if you go back to the price of an album, which, let's say, $20 on a CD, $2 of that maybe got to the musicians. If we're talking like a manufactured pop group, then they might have to have 3 hit singles in a row before they even see a cent themselves, because the music company has racked up $500,000 on video production costs and touring and makeup and styling and graphic design, and all that has to be paid for before the musicians even see a cent. Now, what's happened is the internet is an information distribution medium that costs less and less all the time. And essentially, you know, if you're talking about music these days, it costs nothing. So along comes Apple and says, here's the iTunes store. And if you want to put music on there, we'll just take a 30% cut of whatever you put there. And, you know, that's for artists starting out. That's a heck of a lot better deal. The distribution company takes 30% rather than the traditional record company taking 90%. Now, all right, there were advertising and marketing and a whole lot of things there, but the idea that the big record companies put up the money and took the risk is kind of not really true. Okay. They're kind of milking existing artists like Madonna, established acts, and it was all of the independent labels and all of the bands, you know, doing the hard yards and playing in pubs and selling CDs out of the car boot to get to the point where the risk was low enough for the big players to pick it up.
Okay. In other words, there's sort of swings and roundabouts with the internet. Stilgherrian is with us, so is Neil Gain. What do you say to that, Neil?
Well, I mean, the business model argument, I've heard it many times, and it always ends up being reverted back to the music industry and, you know, an analogy with the music industry. But, I mean, the business model of the music industry, artists starting out, you know, percentage of a CD that goes to the artist, so on and so forth, simply cannot translate to the movie and TV industry. I mean, you just need to look at the credits at the end of a film to see how many people are involved. You just need to read the, you know, any industry magazine to realize how much a film or a TV drama, Australian TV drama, costs. So that analogy simply doesn't travel.
Okay, and at the end of the day, someone's got to, if you're going to have high quality production, someone's got to spend enough money on it that someone can recoup the $1 million an hour or the $10 million an hour. That's your argument, Neil.
Essentially, yes. And also in terms of, you know, the Y or X or Z generation, you know, and the new social media where people want something, you know, immediately. Well, I mean, to be honest, the expectation of getting something for nothing and something immediately is an unfortunate byproduct of the internet era.
Okay, but, you know, can you accept that even if you're right morally and, you know, intellectually and all these things on this argument, you've lost it. You've lost it legally. You've lost it practically. You've lost the war in practice. The only thing the industry can do is somehow make it so easy, so attractive that you'll at least get the majority of people doing these things legally.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that. I don't think we've lost it in practice at all. I think the key focus is education. I think also with a convergence of business models between ISPs and rights holders, where ISPs need to monetize content, I'm hopeful that we will be seeing more effort by ISPs to protect, through education, but protect the content that they are trying to monetize.
Okay. We'll leave it there. But Neil Gain, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Richard.
And Stilgherrian, thank you very much as well. Thanks.
My pleasure, Richard.
There you go, Stilgherrian in debate with Neil Gain as the High Court of Australia rules in favour of the IP providers, in this case, IINet, who was the one that the Hollywood chose to take on. Someone on the SMS saying, why did they choose them rather than Telstra? I think the reason is that there were more, because of the nature of this company and the sort of big download limits they had at a reasonable price, they tended to have a lot of customers who were doing a lot of downloading. They had a customer base who were really into this stuff, and that was why the Hollywood companies and others seemed to choose them for the court case. But they have lost. IINet has won. And as you hear, what happens next is a matter of, great contention.